You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Dayton, El Paso, Gilroy, Virginia Beach. And that's just this summer. I've been doing this podcast for almost a decade, and I've opened the show, I don't know how many times, talking or having to talk about the latest mass shooting. Ranting about the NRA and Republicans who refuse to pass the kind of gun safety regulations, background checks, closing the gun show loopholes, safe storage, liability insurance, the kind of gun safety regulations supported by super majorities of Americans, including majorities of Republicans, gun owners, and for fuck's sake, NRA members. Actually, this morning I thought I'd take a look at the timeline of mass shootings in the United States since we started doing this show, and then guess at how many times I'd had to open the show talking about guns. Turns out there have been 120 mass shootings in the United States over the last 10 years, which means I could have opened one out of every five shows with a rant about guns. Thousand Oaks, California. Pittsburgh, Parkland, it never stops. I was in Austria for the last few weeks to see friends, hide out, get some writing done. And a week ago, right before the mass shooting at the Gilroy Garlic Festival, I said to one of my friends that there's always this moment that sneaks up on me when I'm over there, when it occurs to me that I haven't walked into a store or sat in a restaurant or seen a show and thought, hope I don't get shot, since I left the United States. And the crazy thing is, this usually occurs to me only after I start feeling a familiar kind of anxiety. I start to feel like, oh, fucking shit, there's something important that I forgot to do. And then it's like, oh, right, I forgot to worry about getting shot to death everywhere I go. It doesn't have to be this way. We don't have to live like this. We don't have to live with the constant nagging fear of gun violence or the constant horrifying reality of it. As David Frum wrote in The Atlantic this weekend, there is one developed country and only one in which it is not only legal but easy and convenient to amass a private arsenal of mass slaughter. That country also happens to be the one and the only one regularly afflicted by mass slaughters perpetrated by aggrieved individuals. More guns, more killing, fewer guns, less killing. Frum writes. Everybody else has that figured out. Americans, and only Americans, refuse to do so. Austria has racists, and Austria has mentally ill people, and Austria has a right-wing movement, a nationalist, populist, racist movement that has put demagogues in power. Austria also has video games and the internet and drag queens and gay marriage, and yes, there are actually Republicans out there blaming gay marriage and drag queens for El Paso and Dayton. What Austria doesn't have is mass shootings. And it's not like it's impossible to get a gun in Austria. Austria actually has, according to CNN, the most relaxed gun laws in Europe. And here's what those relaxed gun laws look like. Anyone who wants to buy a gun in Austria must pass a criminal history background check, submit to a mental health survey, pass a course on safe gun handling and safe gun storage, and install a safe gun storage system, a gun safe or locking case, in their home before they're allowed to buy a gun. And anyone who buys a rifle or shotgun has to do all that, but also has to wait 3 days before picking it up. Those are the EU's laxest gun regulations, ladies and gentlemen, and they're the reason why mass shootings, while not an impossibility anywhere people have guns, aren't a constant nagging fear there, or a daily reality, despite all the drag shows in Vienna. You know what else we shouldn't have to live with? A racist piece of shit in the Oval Office cranking up his fellow white supremacists and inciting violence against black and brown people. We're constantly told that the president's number one job is keeping Americans safe. Our racist president is getting Americans killed. Take it away, Beto O'Rourke.
This president, his open racism is also an invitation to violence. We've seen a rise in hate crimes every single one of the last 3 years. So, Joe, you're absolutely right. The writing has been on the wall since his maiden speech coming down that escalator describing Mexican immigrants as rapists and criminals. The actions that follow cannot surprise us. And anyone who is surprised is part of this problem right now, including members of the media who ask, hey, Beto, do you think the president is racist? Well, Jesus Christ, of course he's racist. He's been racist from day one, before day one, when he was questioning whether Barack Obama was born in the United States. He's trafficked in this stuff from the very beginning. And we are reaping right now what he has sown and what his supporters in Congress have sown. We have to put a stop to it.
Set aside Russia and obstruction of justice and violations of the Emoluments Clause. House Democrats can and should impeach the motherfucker just for getting Americans killed in Charlottesville, at the Tree of Life Synagogue, at the Walmart in El Paso. The House can impeach, of course, but only the Senate can convict and remove the president. So it's not worth it, some say, because Moscow Mitch, Putin's bitch, McConnell won't allow it. Dems should impeach the motherfucker anyway. Call Mitch McConnell's bluff. Because what's going on here is this. Republicans are hoping they can lock in white minority rule in this country through voter suppression, Supreme Court-approved gerrymandering, hacking the census. Their goal is to lock in white minority rule before the country becomes minority-majority in the next 20 years. If they can manage to do that, then sticking with Trump now could keep them in power forever. But if they can't manage it, and we should all be working hard to make sure they can't, who have you registered to vote today? If they can't lock in white minority rule before the clock runs out, standing with Trump now, standing with Trump at his impeachment trial in the Senate, that's going to do to the Republican Party just what Lindsey Graham said it would do to the Republican Party back in 2016. If we nominate Trump, Graham tweeted during the 2016 GOP primary, we will get destroyed and we will deserve it. That was Lindsey then. Lindsey now is one of Trump's most servile turd polishers. Trump can barely pinch it off before Lindsey's tongue is all over it, polishing it for us. What do they have on him, I wonder? Briefly. I wonder very briefly, because I think we all know what they have on Lindsey. All right, coming up on today's show, on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as much show and no ads, Dr. Debbie Herbenick from Indiana University joins us to talk about people with high libidos and people who don't like their high libidos, and if there's anything someone can do to lower their high libido. All that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get $60 off at blueapron.com/savage.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
This episode is brought to you by ThredUp, the world's largest online resale store where you can buy and sell secondhand clothing. For a limited time, get 50% off your first order when you go to ThredUp.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a bisexual female in my 30s living in Southern California, and I don't know if I need to see a certain person I met again. So it was Pride weekend down here, and I met a guy, it was really cool. We were at the bar. I went to the bar late night. I work nights, so you know, by the time I get off, everybody's wasted at the bar anyway. And this guy looking at me from down the bar. Eventually, we end up talking. Says I'm the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. Like, kind of a dream. But he's leaning in really hard. Like, really hard. Like, so hard that the person next to me feels me leaning on them. I kind of write it off to being drunk. We end up making out, sort of hooking up, but, well, he doesn't work very well with alcohol. We'll just put it that way. So we didn't really, like, hook up. There's no PIV. Anyway, he says he wants to take me on a date. So we go on this date. We have dinner. And the whole time, he's just, like, touching me, caressing me, leaning it again. Again, I end up, like, elbowing the person next to us at the bar repeatedly because I'm leaning away every time I lean away, he just leans in deeper. And I tell him like 3 or 4 times, I'm like, look, he's like, I'm just really affectionate. And I was like, affection and sex are 2 different things. And after that, got really awkward. And it just, the conversation just kind of dropped. And then it was kind of over, you know, doing research and like people, I have this hard time drawing this line between affection and sex, and like men and women look at it differently. And there's all these psychological articles about, you know, women want affection so that they feel like they want to have sex, and men give affection hoping to get sex, at least in heterosexual coupling. Well, I don't know. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, my thought, what I'm sitting here thinking is, what I'm wondering about is why you left this shitty second date with this shitty person thinking you had any research you needed to do, researching the different ways men and women approach sex. Now, when you make those kinds of generalizations about 3.5 billion people on the one hand, 3.5 billion people on the other hand, there will be hundreds of millions of exceptions. A lot of those exceptions are going to be queer people like you or listeners to this program who are not all queer. But yeah, there's research out there, and there are researchers who argue that men get horny and want to have sex, and a lot of women, particularly in long-term relationships, start having sex and then get horny. And these are different modes, but there are men who operate in that sort of quote-unquote female way and women who operate in the quote-unquote male way. Again, tens of millions of exceptions, but these things may be broadly true, particularly in the context of a long-term relationship. None of that excuses what this guy was doing. What you chalked up to him being drunk on Pride weekend and being a little touchy, and you were willing to tolerate on Pride weekend, he demonstrated to you on a follow-up date when he was sober, is just the way he rolls. Not only is he grabby, not only is he touchy in such a way that it makes the woman he's on a date with uncomfortable and the people around her that she's leaning into to get the fuck away from him uncomfortable, when the woman he's on a date with tells him to back off and knock it off, he refuses. That doesn't obligate that woman to go home and do some research into the different ways men and women approach hooking up or dating or sex in the context of a second date or a long-term relationship. You don't have to make excuses for him, which kind of sounds like what you're doing in a long and roundabout way that took you to Google and Encyclopedia Britannica and wherever else your research led you. All you need to do is block this guy's number on your phone. All you need to do after a shitty second date, really, I think you can ghost on a guy after a shitty second date, particularly a guy who behaved the way this guy did, and forget the fuck about him. And then ask yourself why, after a shitty date with a shitty guy who revealed himself through his actions and his statements to be disrespectful of your personal space and your stated boundaries, why you would go home and start Googling excuses for him. You didn't need to do that, and you don't need to do that in the future, and I would encourage you not to do that in the future. And P.S., fuck that guy.
Hi, Dan. 30-year-old female here. My boyfriend and I have been together 4 years. We just had this ridiculous fight the other night. He just exploded irrationally with anger. He's doing some home repair stuff, and it went really badly, and he just completely melted down. I was on a Skype call for my business at the time, and he was storming through the house, slamming doors, yelled a few things at me while I was on the call, to the point that the woman I was talking with noticed and acknowledged that it was happening, just full toddler-level meltdown. After he said he was pissed at me for not leaving enough time to help him with whatever home repair thing he was doing from start to finish, and he's pissed that I left him to do it alone when I went to go do my call. We've been together 4 years. He's never done this before. This is totally out of left field. We haven't spoken in 2 days now, and I just don't know how to react or what to say. I don't know if it's a relationship extinction event. It definitely could be, but I just need to figure out, how do I respond in a way that's not enabling him to do it again, that's healthy, that's mature of me to really lay that boundary? I think I'm just kind of too close to it now to figure this out for myself.
It's often the case when someone explodes irrationally with anger, when they react with a degree of anger, slamming doors, stomping around, freaking out like a toddler, that seems out of all proportion to what's happening in the moment or what just happened or whatever wrong they feel they might have been dealt at your hands, that they're usually angry about something else and they're having a hard time expressing it and they're bottling it up. And then all the rage comes spilling out at what seems, I think subconsciously, like
a decent opportunity to express that rage, to vent some of the anger. But that's very confusing, of course, for the person on the receiving end of that disproportionate, seemingly irrational anger, because your partner is freaking out about X when the real issue is Y. And so if you don't want this to be a relationship extinction level event, if you are not ready after this one giant meltdown to pull the plug, you go to him and you sit down with him and you say, what was that about? What was that really about? Are there other issues? And you can have a conversation where you draw them out, where you are solicitous and you listen to them. Maybe they're having a hard time bringing something up. Maybe they've tried to bring something up in the past and you've shut down that conversation or you've reacted angrily. I'm not trying to justify your boyfriend's behavior in that moment, but you know, there's a lot of yin-yang push-pull in a relationship. And sometimes people bottle up their anger, not because they're particularly fond of bottling up their anger, but they feel they can't express it in the relationship. And I don't know what the other dynamics in your relationship are like emotionally. Maybe he reacted with irrational anger to that event, but maybe his bottling up his anger, which then burst out in this shitty way at that stupid moment, maybe he had a reason for bottling it up and maybe you contributed in some way. Like I said, draw him out, have this conversation. You should make it clear in this conversation that you are not going to put up with or live with this. The fact that you're 4 years into this relationship and this has never happened before encourages me to think this may be anomalous behavior on his part, that it may not be a pattern. Typically, when someone is emotionally abusive, the warning signs come early and the explosions, the seemingly irrational anger, that person sort of blowing up at you about unpredictable shit so that you're always on eggshells around them, that happens a lot sooner than 4 years in. So I'm not giving him the benefit of the doubt right now. I'm giving your relationship the benefit of the doubt. So go to him. Put it all on the table. Tell him that was unacceptable. You're not going to live with that, with the fear that that could happen at any time for seemingly trivial reasons. So you want to know what was going on for him and you want an assurance from him that that won't happen again and that you two will find in the moment more constructive ways to process and handle your anger. And if there's some reason he's been bottling it up, you want to address that too. This season, experience the joy of cooking something new and making dinner fun with Blue Apron. Check out their summer menu and try customer favorite burger recipes with the Beyond Burger. You've heard about the plant-based burger phenomenon. Now you can give it a try. Blue Apron supplies the recipe and the Beyond Burger. You do the cooking and the results will truly be phenomenal. Blue Apron helped me discover my inner chef and learn new recipes, or recipes at all, and new cooking techniques. And I learn new cooking techniques all the time. And because of Blue Apron, me, someone who could basically make toast and cereal by putting it in a bowl and pouring milk on top of it, I now love to cook. Blue Apron has exposed me to delicious recipes I never would have thought to try. And I'm able to do it because with Blue Apron, the hard parts are done for me, which makes cooking not a burden or a mystery anymore. In fact, it's actually kind of fun to learn new kitchen skills with each meal that I manage with my own hands to prepare with Blue Apron's help. Blue Apron has helped me make cooking at home a sustainable part of my weekly routine. Blue Apron's menu is carefully designed and tested by their test kitchen chefs. Their test kitchen uses unique specialty ingredients to bring chef-quality recipes to your dinner table. To start making delicious brag-worthy meals at home, also Instagram-worthy meals at home, without hassle, try Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get $60 off when you visit blueapron.com/savage. That's blueapron.com/savage for $60 off. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hey, Dan, 29-year-old female calling from Florida. I'm married. Me and my husband have been married for 2 years, together for 7. And we've been doing the open relationship thing. But I suffer from anxiety, and my husband is pretty normal. So my question is, how would I go about finding a therapist that is going to be sex positive and open, that I can talk to about the anxieties that are surfacing because of
our open relationship. I've already am seeing a psychiatrist and I'm on medication that is working good for me. I've done talk therapy in the past, and so I definitely feel like I would just benefit from having a third party, non-biased person to walk me through, again, the anxieties that are coming up because of this open relationship. Not really about the open relationship, but more about anxieties about myself. So what would be your best suggestion for finding a sex positive talk therapist?
Truly the best place to start if you want to find a sex positive or kink positive or poly or open relationship positive therapist is asect.org. That's A-A-S-E-C-T.org. That's the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. And they have state by state, region by region listings. And it's a pretty sex positive, kink positive, poly and open relationship positive organization. So there's some self-sorting that goes on before people even list themselves with ASECT. That said, your first interaction with a therapist or a counselor is usually, these days, via their website, via email, and you're engaging them, you're hiring them, and you are allowed to ask them a few questions via email before your first session. So go to ASECT.org, find a few therapists or counselors in your area, and send them a few emails saying you're looking for a sex-positive, open relationship-positive counselor or therapist that you can speak with, and you wanted to know what their take is on open relationships prior to your first appointment. And I promise you, if it's a therapist you'd want to make a first appointment with or a 44th appointment with, you'll get a thoughtful email unpacking their position, their take on open relationships. And if you don't, there's your answer. But that's where to start. ASECT.org is where to start. Also, if you have friends who are in open or poly relationships, a lot of people in open poly relationships have seen counselors and therapists. There's a lot of processing you have to do in open and poly land. And you may have friends in open and poly land that you're not aware of who've already sat down with counselors and therapists. And just a little honesty, there's no shame in seeking out counseling or therapy. It's to your credit that you're seeking out counseling and therapy to help you guys address issues in your open relationship. Just asking other people that you know in the open or poly community if they've ever sought counseling, and if so, could they refer you to someone if they had a good interaction with a person? That's another great way to find that open or poly positive counselor or therapist.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. They make it simple and intuitive to create your website, blog, or online store. You don't have to hire some fancy pants coder or your neighbor's sullen teen to build a website. You can create a beautiful website yourself with Squarespace's all-in-one platform. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever. They have templates that were created by smart designers that you can just drop in and it looks good right away. Squarespace is used by a wide variety of creative types: businesses, musicians, designers, freaks, artists, klezmer bands, restaurants, and more. If you plan to create a website for your business, Squarespace has all the tools you need to get it up and running quickly. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a cisgendered straight female from the West Coast. Until recently, I've been in a relationship with a guy for 2 years. We've gone through quite a bit in this short time. One major event being that I found out that he was full-on dating another girl behind my back throughout the first year. I was going through some personal issues at the time and suffered a low self-esteem, hence my giving him several more chances to be the partner I desired, and he kept promising to be. He refused to let me go, and I wasn't over him, so I blindly gave him my trust again. I moved in with him late last year. I didn't seem to witness any questionable behavior. I also chose not to obsess over it, as I began working on self-love and making strides in my self-improvement. Despite everything, I'm not the type to snoop, so I let the past go to the best of my ability, but upon living together and getting to know him better, I discovered that I just flat out don't feel like he's a good man, and I don't really like his character very much at the end of the day. I've been actually very troubled by this and haven't had the heart somehow to leave, again, despite everything. A couple weeks ago, he was passed out on the couch, and I went to empty my pipe in the ashtray on his desk where his phone was plugged in, face up with the screen on, unlocked. I know that sounds strange, but I promise that snooping through his phone was the furthest thing from my mind at the moment. I looked down and see messages from what appeared to be females. So I opened one and another. Turns out it was the Grindr app. And he was on there exchanging dick pics talking about hooking up with men of all ages and several transgendered women during the afternoon while I work. I was honestly shocked, as I had no idea that he swung that way. Also, I hadn't suspected anything this time, infidelity-wise. So I finally got my out. I confronted him and broke up with him. Once again, he's begging for more chances and claiming that he can change, but I'm just fresh out of chances for the guy. I guess my question for you boils down to this. Is this more common than I thought? Seemingly straight, almost homophobic males secretly pursuing dick? My best friend is married to a man who is similar in that macho way, and she has also painfully discovered his closeted love and desire for cock. I have no issue at all with people's sexual and romantic preferences in any way, but this is just not something I'm interested in encountering in my own romantic relationships. Is this just how men are now based on what you witness? And sexuality aside, do you have any tips for finding a good, honest man that's capable of true monogamy these days?
A lot of gay men wished they lived in a world where it was common for straight guys to love dick or want dick, secretly want dick, that every hot straight guy on the planet, including the homophobic ones, are secretly on the down low, are all over Grindr. Now, if you get on Grindr, or back in the day you got on Craigslist, it wasn't that hard to find straight identified guys, guys with girlfriends and wives who were looking to get blown and in some cases looking to do the blowing themselves. There are a lot of closeted bi guys out there. Most guys who are bi, who are in committed opposite sex long-term relationships, aren't out to their partners. And along comes the internet 20 years ago, and it made it really easy for these guys, easier for these guys to live a less risky double life. They didn't have to be seen going in and out of a gay bar or a gay bathhouse or a notorious downtown dirty bookstore or risk getting busted in a park under a bush with a dude to get their same-sex rocks off. They can arrange to get their same-sex rocks off on their phones discreetly. The problem, of course, is you leave a digital trail and sometimes you pass out on the couch with your phone sitting open, charging, and messages coming in, and your girlfriend or wife sees that. And with cheating in the past, you know, snooping is always wrong. People shouldn't snoop. You're a bad girl for snooping or a bad adult woman for snooping. But sometimes when you snoop, you find out things you kind of had a right to know or a pressing need to know. So snooping is always wrong, except when it's retroactively justified by whatever it is someone found. Your husband has a secret second family in another city. Kind of had a right to know that. And if you found out by snooping, I think the snooping is the smaller or negligible or non-existent in that context offense. Anyway, yeah, this is a thing. This is a thing that happens. That doesn't mean all straight identified guys are secretly sucking or hungering for cock. There is, however, a lot of research out there, a growing body of research that shows that guys who are kind of homophobic, guys who perform homophobia, are likelier to have same-sex attractions and desires than chill straight guys who aren't homophobic. Sometimes when someone is homophobic, they're throwing up flack. It's camouflage. They're trying to distract you from the fact that they may have downloaded the Grindr app onto their phone. You are absolutely justified in leaving this guy. He is who he is. I think he needs to embrace who he is. He's a bisexual guy who isn't interested in or capable of being monogamous. He needs to seek out a partner who wants what he is so that he doesn't have to lie, he doesn't have to hide, and he doesn't face decades of the stress of worrying about getting caught. Now, for many homophobic, straight-identified guys who want to have dick or cheat, they don't want to have an honest, ethical, non-monogamous relationship because they don't want their partner to sleep with anybody else. They just want to be able to do this themselves. They want monogamy from a person, but they don't want to be monogamous to that person. And those guys grow up to become terrible, shitty, serial cheaters. And fuck those guys, or don't fuck those guys. And if you find out you're fucking that guy or dating that guy or living with that guy, leave that guy. I think you did the right thing. As for finding someone who is good at and wants monogamy, they're out there. Monogamy is not natural. Monogamy is a struggle. If you can accept that someone making a monogamous commitment to you doesn't mean that guy isn't attracted to anybody else ever, I think that makes having a monogamous relationship easier. You know, when two people are doing the monogamous thing, it's basically two people who've agreed to stand on one foot together for the rest of their lives. You can do that. It's a bit of a struggle. If somebody touches the ground with their other foot once or twice over the 50 years you were standing on one foot, they were pretty good at standing on one foot. Said this before, if you're with somebody for 50 years, they only cheat on you once or twice. They were good at monogamy, not bad at monogamy. Monogamy is the only thing we tell people they have to execute perfectly throughout their entire lives to be any good at. And that's crazy. So you may find a guy who's good at monogamy, who wants to make and honor and keep a monogamous commitment, and that guy may still at some point over the 50 years that you'll be together cheat on you once. I think once can be forgiven. What your boyfriend, your ex-boyfriend was doing habitually, routinely, behind your back, I don't think that's forgivable. And I think you were right to break up with him. But going forward into your next monogamous commitment, you aren't going to find perfection. And you aren't going to be perfection either. That doesn't mean he's definitely going to cheat on you. That doesn't mean you're definitely going to cheat on them. But there will be desire and there will be complications. And in all long-term relationships, there are betrayals of all sorts, not just sexual betrayals. And it's forgiveness that makes it possible for a relationship to become a long-term relationship, a truly long-term relationship. So I don't think that you were wrong to forgive this guy and give him a chance to do better after you found him cheating on you the first time. After you found him cheating on you in this way the second time, I think you were absolutely right to leave him. Did you guys know that 26 billion pounds of clothes are thrown out each year and that 95% of them could have been recycled or reused? Textile waste is a huge problem, and buying and selling secondhand clothes provides a really simple, easy, and stylish solution. ThredUp is the world's largest online resale store where you can buy and sell secondhand clothing. They make it really easy to clean out and then restock your wardrobe affordably and responsibly. If you like the idea of thrifting, but you don't have the time to dig through racks of clothes that aren't in your size and aren't the styles you're looking for, you need to check out ThredUp. They have transformed the thrifting game. You can filter at ThredUp by almost anything: size, brand, style, color, even condition. You can also save searches and favorite items that you have your eye on. It's quick and easy to find what you love from all the top brands like Banana Republic, Ann Taylor, Lululemon, and more. Plus, items at ThredUp are up to 90% off estimated retail. Along with the great deals you can score while shopping at ThredUp, they're an amazing resource to help you clean out your closet. Don't you be throwing clothes away. Don't be part of the problem. Simply order a free clean-out kit online, fill it up with your items, and send it back. ThredUp will take care of everything else, and you'll earn a little cash or credit for what sells, and the rest is responsibly reused or recycled. It is so easy. Whether you're looking to freshen up your wardrobe for fall, shopping for back to school, or just want to get some new trendy pieces, ThredUp is the perfect solution for your wallet and the planet. And for a limited time, ThredUp is offering my listeners up to 50% off your first order when you go to ThredUp.com/savage. That discount comes on top of the already low prices, so hurry up and take advantage and support the show by going to ThredUp.com/savage. That's ThredUp.com/savage for up to 50% off select items today. Terms apply.
Hi, Dan. I'm a mid-20s trans woman based out of Los Angeles. I recently went and visited my parents' place over in Detroit, and long story short, I went into a dungeon and I bottomed with someone and I forgot to disclose that I'm trans. Now, this person made a little remark, which was fine. They were cool with everything, but they were basically like, hey, you know, you should probably tell your partners. I mean, granted, they were very cool with it, but I honestly forgot. It happens a lot. I forget that there's really anything different about me. Now, I can definitely see a lot of implications that could happen with that, especially like if you don't disclose to someone, they play in a scene and then later they have, I don't know, maybe some sort of drop and basically change their mind and get, you know, trans panic. I don't know what to really call it. So my question is, do I have to disclose? Am I a bad person for forgetting to disclose that I'm trans?
I'm going to make a pretty facile comparison here, and forgive me, and I hope it's not offensive to you or other members of the trans community. But when I'm out in public with my husband and I want to take his hand or I want to give him a kiss goodbye at the airport or wherever, I shouldn't have to look around, but I do. I should live in a world where I can take his hand without worrying about violence, about the reactions of others around me. But I do worry. And so for my own safety, when I'm going to kiss him goodbye, my eyes dart left and right. Now, sometimes they don't. I think at SeaTac Airport in Seattle, where I said goodbye to my husband recently, it's pretty safe for me to kiss him goodbye. But sometimes we're walking down the street in Iowa when we're visiting relatives, or there may be someone walking down the street in Seattle where we live who just washed in from Montana or Wyoming. Not that there aren't queer positive people in those places and queer people in those places, but you know what I mean. We may be walking down the street in Seattle, and it could be at that moment unsafe for me to take his hand. And I shouldn't have to think about these things. I shouldn't have to look around for my own safety, but I do, because I want to be safe. Trans people are subjected to, as I don't need to tell you, so much violence in this society, in our culture. And trans people, for their own safety, when they're with someone sexually, I think in their own self-interest, should disclose their trans identity. Not as a courtesy, not so that that other person doesn't touch a trans person and get trans cooties, but for your own safety. I shouldn't have to look around and then think twice about taking my husband's hand to protect the delicate sensibilities of some homophobic bigot from why I fucking oming. I look around to protect myself. I think the same kind of applies here, that you might want to disclose that you're trans to someone you're going to hook up with in a dungeon or anywhere else, not for them, but for you. Now, the person you hooked up with in that dungeon, they clocked you as trans. They didn't have a problem with it. You guys had a great sexual encounter. And then they let you know that maybe you would want to disclose. Maybe they're aware of the violence trans people are subjected to in our society. Maybe they've seen other trans people in Detroit in that dungeon subjected to violence when the person they were with or even just flirting with realized they were trans or was told they were trans. It's not like disclosure immunizes a trans person from violence. Sometimes trans people disclose before intimacy and are still subjected to violence because some people are attracted to trans people and know it subconsciously or consciously but don't want to admit it or confront it. And some people are shocked to discover that they are attracted to a trans person. So, yeah, I'm on the side of disclosure. Again, not to protect them. I'm on the side of disclosure to protect you.
Hello, Dan. This is a 38-year-old straight male from the Midwest. I'm in an open relationship, and my girlfriend is married, or we're going through some difficulties now because she, a few months ago, had sex with her good friend when I was at her place. And then that continued to happen twice. And I represented at the time that I was kind of cool with it. And then it seemed to have like bothered me more over time. We tried to put forth like certain like rules, at least that you could only spend like sort of a certain amount of time with him. But then other things sort of unexpectedly came up and stuff. And she's married, and the understanding was that we were in an open relationship, but she actually doesn't have any physical relationship with her husband. So it just seemed like I think maybe I had the expectation of monogamy. So I don't know. I know you're monogamish, and I know you have experience advising people in poly situations. I was wondering if there's, you know, what would you suggest sort of deal with jealousy as an issue, because I really love this woman. I'm poly-minded myself, but I think I'm more poly-minded from doing, you know, from me seeing other people. So I'm just trying to work that out, that kind of hypocritical stance.
So you're poly-minded in the sense that it's okay for you to sleep with other women, but not so poly-minded as to believe it's okay for your girlfriend, who is married, to sleep with other men. That's not really poly-minded. That's sexist double standard-minded. That's misogynistic patriarchal-minded. It was common throughout most of human history for men to sleep with multiple partners and for men to not allow their female partners the same freedom or license and for men to be extremely threatened when their female partner slept with other people at the same clip or at all or even expressed a desire or an attraction to another man. And men would typically flip out. And there you are, sort of low-key flipping out, knowing that you're being hypocritical. So what do you do? So when it comes to poly or open relationships, there tends to be a lot more talking than fucking, and it's the extra talking that makes the extra fucking or the extra partners possible. You need to talk with your girlfriend about your assumptions and your expectations, and you need to own that your assumptions and expectations were self-serving and sexist, and you need to do the work of reprogramming yourself. If you are going to be poly and not a polygamist, it has to be okay for her to sleep with other guys too, if you are sleeping with other women. And again, you went into this relationship knowing she was married to another man. You say you assumed, or perhaps she put it out there, that she wasn't having a sexual relationship with her husband. But then this guy came along, this friend came along, and she wanted to sleep with him. Sounds like she checked with you because you say you let her know it was okay for her to sleep with this other guy. But then she actually did it and you got angry. So when you talk to her about your jealousy, like, own up to your feelings, but you're going to have to own what's shitty about them and double standardy about them. And you're going to have to ask her to give you a little time and a little space and perhaps hold your hand a bit to help you work through this and get past it. Because if you can't work through it and you can't get past it, then you're not poly-minded. Then you shouldn't be entering into ethical non-monogamous relationships. Perhaps you should seek out the kinds of relationships that many men, many straight men throughout history have sought and had, where their wives or girlfriends were monogamous and they cheated. But you don't want to be a cheater. You want to be poly. You want to be a good and decent dude, which means you're going to have to do some work on yourself, again, to get yourself there. And you can ask your girlfriend, your married girlfriend, for her help. What I don't think you can reasonably insist on is that your married girlfriend refrain from sleeping with other guys while you sleep with other women. And I don't think it's fair for you to impose rules, as some people who believe themselves to be poly-minded think they want an open relationship or want an open relationship for themselves but not for their partners. I don't think it'd be fair for you to impose so many rules and restrictions on your girlfriend that it becomes practically impossible, functionally impossible, for her to actually sleep with anybody else. But circling back to your question, how do you deal with jealousy? A poisonous kind of sexist, misogynistic jealousy in this instance that could destroy your relationship? Well, you've recognized it. You never really said that this was your problem. Start there. This is my problem, and I need to work on this. I would like your help. Maybe your girlfriend can give you a few months where she's not going to sleep with anybody else. Sometimes in open relationships, one or more of the people involved will close down sexual contacts with others out of consideration for their partner's feelings or insecurities, on the condition and on the understanding that their partner is actively working through those insecurities. And they just need a little breather. They just need a little space so they can come out the other side and be comfortable with it. But if you don't move in that direction, if you don't get comfortable with it, if you don't get comfortable with the idea that there's one set of rules for both of you or for all of you, since this is a poly relationship involving more than two people, yeah, then you're not cut out for poly, at least not at the moment. Not even cut out, it would seem, for an open relationship. Not at the moment. Not until you fix this. Not until you get past it. Not until you reach into your motherboard and tear out this sexist, paternalistic, misogynistic double standard that you're laboring under right now in an open relationship. Yeah, no, that's a sign that you aren't ready to be in an open relationship. The problem is you are already in an open relationship. So what do? Well, you could end this relationship, or you could ask your girlfriend to put up with your jealousy while you work through it, dismantle, diffuse, and disarm it. But if in the end you can't, then you need to exit this relationship. All right, we're going to read your tweets. And unsurprisingly, there are a lot of tweets about my advice to the woman whose husband, after 7 years, keeps pissing on the floor despite her protests in the middle of the night when he goes to the bathroom, and she trods through it when she goes to the bathroom and she is pissed. Jennifer Laurie tweets, "Dan, how could you have not told the inconsiderate and lazy man who pees on the floor to just wipe the floor after he pees? Come on, P.S.
Love you. Larissa tweets, I'm surprised, Dan, that you failed to suggest that this capable adult peer clean up after himself, grab a mop, some baby wipes, whatever, my dude. Your family deserves better than a public urinal. And Vima Manfredo tweets, episode 666 of the Savage Lovecast, the peer. The simplest solution is clear. Clean up after yourself. Pee on the seat, clean it. Pee on the floor, clean it. Really that simple. We hear you. Nancy has heard you. Nancy actually begs that no one else call in with any more feedback about that particular question. She is sick of listening to everyone make the same point, which is that this asshole should clean up after himself. You know what? I agree with all of you. And the caller has been saying that to this asshole for 7 years to no effect. My advice to get a urinal, to get a plastic urinal that he can stand and stick his dick in and pee and get it all in the bottle, is a hallelujah pass, a desperate measure for desperate times. Not the first thing that I would advise someone whose partner is peeing on the floor, but literally the last thing I would advise. And it is the last thing that she can do. She's tried screaming. She's tried yelling. Nothing has worked. Maybe this will work. And if it doesn't work, well, then there's divorce. Moving on, Dance Remember tweets, the way at fake Dan Savage pronounces the word vulnerable is my kink. Hashtag Savage Lovecast. Is there something odd about the way I pronounce it? Vulnerable? I hadn't heard. And finally, Aurora Erratic tweets, I miss the old days of the Savage Lovecast when Dan talked slow enough that I could understand him. Even the theme song was slower then. Hashtag Savage Lovecast. You know, if the theme song is speeding up, I don't think it's us. I think maybe you accidentally pressed that 1.5 time or 2 time speed button on your podcast app. You might want to check that out. All right, your response calls, none of which are about that asshole peeing on the floor.
Hey, Dan. This is a response to the lady whose boyfriend went psycho and sent photos of her house sitting gang to her bosses to get her in trouble. The reason he freaked out is because he got humiliated. And humiliated men are fucking dangerous. I don't necessarily think it was the right thing to tell her to basically coddle his emotions to keep him from blowing up, but humiliated men are the men who beat their partners and go on mass shooting rampages. And frankly, I'm really fucking sick and tired of dealing with humiliated men not being able to handle their shit and punishing everybody else for it. So, guys, learn to deal with humiliation and insecurity and stop taking it out on all the people around you.
Hey, this is for episode 666, the woman who has the higher libido than her husband of 2 years, and now she's wondering if there's something abnormal about her, and he's not a very giving partner, and he doesn't seem to enjoy giving pleasure for its own sake. Dan said he was here from the future. Oh, honey, I am here from your future. It's not going to get better. It's not even going to stay this bad. It's going to get worse and worse. And this is not an issue of you having a mismatch in libido, although you might. This is a man who is rejecting you non-verbally over and over again. And that rejection will chip away and chip away at your self-esteem. It will destroy your confidence. It will seep into resentment. There's nothing good that's going to come of this. He's telling you in a ton of different little ways that he is not interested in having sex with you. He is not interested in making sure that it feels good for you, even if he doesn't get anything out of it. He is not interested in learning how to be a better sexual partner. And on top of it all, he seems to be gaslighting you or attempting really hard to pathologize your normal, healthy sex drive. This is really, really bad. Please consider, if not a lot of marriage counseling, leaving this marriage.
Hi, Dan. I called a few weeks ago in a Burning Man marriage with not enough sex. And after talking to you, you gave me the bravery and the courage to actually listen to myself and stop lying to myself and leave my marriage. And I just want to thank you for that. Since we spoke, I've filed for divorce, I've moved on, and now I can have the best sex of my life forever. Thank you so much for changing my life. I so appreciate it.
Congratulations on this new chapter in your life. We're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. The deadline for submitting your film to Hump, My Dirty Little Film Festival, approaches. Go to humpfilmfest.com/submit for information about making a dirty little porno for Hump. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Dr. Debbie Herbenik on Twitter at Debbie Herbenik. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Artunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. And Nancy, we'll all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading, and thank you to all the guys out there who clean up after themselves after they pee on the floor. We see you.